Well, as we always do every week on the hot seat, we check in with a member of Her Majesty's official loyal opposition, and it is our first hot seat of this week, and it is with the second most, the member who's joined us the second most on the hot seat, one behind Sarah Hoffman. I do have to always point that out. It's David Shepherd. David, welcome back.
Hey, Kenny. It's great to be here.
Awesome. So, you know what, obviously a few different things, and you and I have chatted about this on the show before, and that is a public inquiry into the government's handling of the COVID pandemic. Now, just a little over a year worth of data, not necessarily to scrutinize or even give it a hard time, but I think if you have that information out there, not only can people learn from it today, but you could play a playbook down there for the next governments and say, hey, this is how we handled it and this is how you can handle it. Why do you think that there's maybe such a resistance from the government to do this in a public method?
Well, you know, you're right, Kenny. It's really concerning. You know, we've been through two waves of COVID so far and are now, I think, pretty much officially starting into a third, and we still have not seen the review that the government promised. So we can only imagine what help that might have been in the midst of the second wave. We saw much higher case count, much higher deaths, effects on the community. We keep seeing the government apparently make the same mistakes with meatpacking plants, again, having outbreaks and continuing in some of these spaces. We could only wonder what we might have learned if the government had put this out. So, you know, this is a government, though, that did get the a national award for the most secretive government in Canada. Certainly, they were not very friendly to us in the estimates process as we tried to dig for more information, presented some of the least information I've ever seen in a business plan. So it just seems this is not a government that wants to be transparent with Albertans.
And I guess also fair enough, but I mean, in saying this, what's it called, the situation is that now, as you mentioned, David, we have more variants out there that from at least what all the science says, the South African variant as well as the UK variant is that those are more contagious. And now, even I think yesterday in her remarks, or couple days ago in her remarks, Dr. Henshaw had actually cited restaurants as a possible source of transmission, which were opened several weeks ago. So in saying that, do you think that now, because, you know, step two has been underway for quite some time now, that we could see more cases, obviously with Henshaw highlighting restaurant factors?
So certainly, Kenny, we are seeing those numbers climb. Again, yesterday, a record number of COVID cases, I believe over 190 of that variant, and it's now approaching 20% of our total cases across the province. This is far more contagious, and as Dr. Henshaw noted, is spreading in restaurants and other spaces that the government sort of opened up not too long ago. So certainly it is really concerning, especially when we see that Premier Kenny has been dealing with MLAs in his own caucus who have been criticizing the health restrictions that are in place. He has refused to speak out against them. He continues to let them undermine Dr. Henshaw. And it seems clear that in some of these steps, he may be more politically motivated than considering public health. That's why we've consistently been calling for him to release the recommendations that he's receiving from Dr. Henshaw so Albertans can judge for themselves what are the best decisions we should be making to protect each other. And secondly, I think really Albertans have a right to see the modeling data that the Premier is looking at in making these decisions that Dr. Henshaw is looking at, as he is now giving some fairly serious warnings about what could happen here if we don't get this under control. And indeed, we see now that AHS and our hospital facilities are gearing up for another third wave, that they are increasing their staffing, preparing COVID wards again. Albertans, I think, deserve to see that data, and it could help a lot to get people to understand just how serious of a threat we face.
And also, I guess, in terms of future planning, that if you have all this information and it's there for the public, future administrations and future governments would have a playbook to learn from and say, you know what, this worked, we're going to try this again, but maybe this wasn't necessarily as effective, let's not try this. So, I mean, in terms of just like having a treasure chest of knowledge that future governments could look at, do you think an opportunity is missed there?
Oh, absolutely, Kenny. Now, certainly it's not too hard to see some of the clear mistakes this government has made. You know, their claim that they were balancing the economy against public health in the fall was pretty clearly proved false, as we ended up with soaring case rates, soaring hospitalizations that ended up putting lives at risk, indeed some people losing their lives, and having an impact on the economy anyway. But there is a lot of fine detail. There is a lot of opportunity for us to learn here. And frankly, that's owed to the Alberta people. This work has been done with their tax dollars. It is stuff that deeply impacts them, their lives, and the lives of future Albertans. So absolutely, we owe it to them to, I think, do the work, do the study, and release that publicly so that we can ensure we have the best protections in place now and going forward.
Yeah, no doubt. And also as well, we know that the tragic news we heard this week is that in 2020, last year, 1,128 Albertans passed away due to opioid-related deaths. Very tragic. And obviously, with something like this, what can the government do? I guess it's such a difficult topic and such a tragic topic. Also, I guess in some cases, possibly avoidable. What role can government play in trying to get that number as low as possible?
Well, I think there's a few things, Kenny. First of all, I think ending stigma around substance use is incredibly important. When people feel that they are judged, that they are going to be considered immoral or bad people for using substances, then they're going to use privately and they're not going to seek help. And unfortunately, what we've seen throughout this government is that they have used language for quite some time, very stigmatizing, calling them addicts, talking about them injecting poison into their veins, making it a very moral question. That drives people underground. That makes the problem worse. Secondly, I think we need to have every possible treatment and support out there that we could. This past year has obviously been difficult for a lot of people. We know that folks in isolation have turned to some substance use, and for folks that are struggling with things like opioids, it's been even worse. Last year, there was a phone line that was set up and ready to go. It was about to be launched so that people could call in. Somebody would stay on the line with them while they're using, and if they had an episode, they could call for help and get EMS there. The government canceled that the day it was supposed to launch, and they did not come up with a substitute until they announced yesterday that they are coming up with an app, and they're going to do a pilot of that app in Calgary. So for months, while we had this record level of deaths, we did not have a support in place because for no other reason I can see than this, the ideology of the government. So the other thing we have to do is be making those investments at every point in the spectrum, from harm reduction through recovery, to make sure that we give people the supports they need when they need them to get them to the place where they're ready to get help.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and I have no problem admitting this, that come April, it'll be 16 years clean for me. So I do have to say that obviously, yeah, I could see how the pandemic has weighed upon people that are in the position I used to be in and how it could really affect somebody. So that is a good point, and somebody who even battled with it, I didn't even think of that, so glad you brought that up. David, we also saw that contract negotiations for our frontline healthcare workers. We know that had been put on hold due to the pandemic, which I guess obviously you got to deal with what you're going to deal with. But a year later, is there any resolution to that?
Well, what we've seen, Kenny, unfortunately, is this government has been incredibly antagonistic towards healthcare workers. One of the first bills they passed was breaking contracts with workers, interestingly enough, to push off negotiations that were owed to them on a salary renegotiation. So what we've seen is that has continued. They've continued to down-talk public employees, talk about the fact that they don't make any contributions to our economy. And what we saw in March of last year is that healthcare workers indeed agreed to delay their negotiations so that they could focus on helping Albertans and getting us through this difficult period. 1 year later, they're ready for their representatives to go back to the table with the government representatives, and the government now is accusing them, because of that, of not caring about Albertans. And the thing is, these folks were working on the front lines through the pandemic at a time when the government told, you know, we're going to lay off up to 11,000 frontline healthcare workers. They sent a letter
yep.
to the United Nurses of Alberta and told them, hey, we may be laying off nurses. And now the government says, well, because we care about Albertans, we want you to wait to negotiate. I think that's unfair. These workers deserve to have the opportunity to negotiate their contracts. Their representatives can do that while they continue working on the front lines, and I think the government owes them the respect to get to the table.
Now, David, I saw something on Twitter. You had a Venn diagram out there about lower taxes and services, and I think it kind of raised an interesting point here, because one of the things Minister Chandra was mentioning on, and that one of the big goals of the government is to reduce the backlogs in surgeries that, surgical facilities all over Canada have obviously been facing due to the pandemic. And in saying that, though, if there is a plan to cut all kinds of workers, how do you think that that's going to manage in terms of trying to catch up on those elective surgeries? That it almost seems counterproductive, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, the government has a pretty ambitious plan, and they claim they're going to be able to follow through on it. Frankly, it'll be a miracle if they can manage to do it, because A, they are not necessarily putting in any more financial resources. Secondly, they are doing this with a workforce that they have been talking down, and frankly, that is exhausted after having to clean up the mess behind the government on the cases of COVID and the surge in the second wave, and now a third. And so you're right. We are going to have a real challenge here for them to find the people that are needed. Not only that, he wants to do 55,000 more surgeries this year. Where are we going to get those anesthesiologists? There's multiple positions that are still open and advertised on the Alberta Health Services website. So certainly this government has a big hill to climb to follow through on its promises, and even just, I think, to deal with the backlog of care and surgeries that we have from COVID-19. So certainly going to be watching that very closely.
Yeah, very interesting to see how that's going to wind up. And obviously, David, when we got you on, I can't not ask you this. Any new bow ties in the mix?
I did break out a new one the other day. My wonderful girlfriend, Anna, got me a custom-made blue bow tie for Christmas.
Nice.
With a YEG for Edmonton, the city I'm proud to represent, the heart of it. I hadn't quite found the right time to break it out, so I broke it out at the legislature yesterday, and so I was really happy to wear that.
That's awesome. All right. I got to debut a new tie yesterday. I'll have to tune into on that and see how it looks, but you rock the bow ties well. I'm going to give you credit for that. And also, because we've seen them online, how's Monty hanging out these days as a tuxedo cat?
Monty's doing really well. He's happy to have the spring weather, so he's going outside multiple times a day. It was funny. I got a video sent to me on Instagram the other day. One of my constituents locally said, "Hey, Monty came by to visit my window," and showed him sort of saying hello to her cat. So he's doing well.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of our old cat Blink, where he would go, he'd leave the house, then come back, and for some reason he'd look like he'd gain a little bit of weight throughout the day going out, because people would follow. That's these cats, the tuxedo cats, because Blink is one too. They know how to hustle, don't they?
Oh, he does, absolutely. He's making a lot of friends in the neighborhood. He's a friendly guy.
Yeah, no, and that's what Blink back in North Montreal is doing right now. Awesome, David. Well, we always thank you for checking in with us, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kenny.
This is David Shepherd. He is the MLA for Edmonton City Centre, also the NDP's critic on health, and this is another edition of The Hot Seat.